It's now my immense pleasure to introduce the man that will deliver our country's ambition, will deliver Labour's mission, our next Prime Minister, Keir Starmer.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Ed, for your introductory remarks and everything that you're doing on this mission. Thank you, Anas, for your remarks, but also for your leadership here in Scotland. And be under no illusions here, the tide is turning here in Scotland. And that's why I'm delighted to be here in Leith to launch the Labour Party's national mission on clean energy, a cause that will create good jobs, well-paid jobs, 500,000 new jobs, 50,000 here in Scotland, will power us forwards towards net zero, generate growth right across the country, end the suffocating cost of living crisis, get Putin's boot off our throat with real energy security, a stronger, more secure Britain, once again at the service of working people with cheaper bills and clean electricity by 2030. It is an ambitious goal. It will put us ahead of any major economy in the world. But at the moment, we're nowhere near the front of the pack. And this is a race we have to win. The biggest opportunity we've had in decades to make the country work for working people. And this is always the test for Labour. The purpose of my Labour Party, all the changes we've made are for this. To face down an age of insecurity, protect, serve, and deliver for the aspirations of working people. And we relish it. We embrace the harsh light of clear accountability. That's the challenge we choose with mission-led government. And we do it because there are deeper questions here. Questions, I'll be frank, that are being asked of all of us, being asked of Britain. Can we still achieve great things? Can we unite and move forward? Can we change? Can we grow? Can we get things done? Can we build things? New industries, new technologies, new jobs. Will they come to our shores? Or will the future pass us by? You can put it even more starkly. Around the world, people want to know, are we still a great nation? And look, if the question is about the British people, the answer is emphatically yes. But if it's about British politics, I don't need to even answer that, do I? This is what we're taking on. The Labour offer at the next election. A new government and a new way of governing. A plan for change. A plan to use clean power to build a new Britain. A plan to get our future back and say to those who doubt that we can still be great, we are, we can, and we will. But also that we must, and that the creative genius of Scotland is critical to our prospects. I'll start with the necessity, the unbending urgency of this mission. It's not just about the imperative of the climate emergency, not just the fundamentals of global economic competition, the race for the jobs of the future. It's all of that, absolutely. But it's also something even more serious. Make no mistake, we are living in an increasingly volatile world. The twin risks of climate change and energy security now threaten the stability of nations. So we've got to ground everything we do in a new insight that clean energy is now essential for national security. Our allies, in the White House in particular, have been crystal clear about this. And the war in Ukraine shows the argument with total clarity. It's asking deep and difficult questions of all of us. And I fully accept, especially here, fossil fuel energy plays a huge role in the Scottish economy. It's also part of the social fabric. Communities depend on it. The jobs it provides, good jobs for working people, they're precious. And I'm not going to give you a moral sermon about the urgency of climate change. Everyone gets that argument. No. What I offer is a plan. A new course through stormy waters. A bridge to a better future. Let me put it this way. I've been right across this nation in the past year. I've been to Wick, Glasgow, Inverness, Kirkcaldy, Rutherglen, Fife, Leith here today. And throughout all this, I see the contours of three different Scotlands. There's the Scotland that the solidarity of working people built, that the labour movement built, the industrial strength, the sense of community, the social housing, the welfare state, the NHS, all emerging out of the rubble of the Second World War, all providing security for working people in defiance of a volatile world. But there's also the scars of a second Scotland, a Scotland born of 1979 onwards, when the Labour Party was turfed out of power, in part, it has to be said, by the SNP, and the Tories got to manage that period of enormous upheaval. It's a Scotland where the prosperity oil and gas could have brought was squandered on a political war against that first Scotland, where the government saw working class solidarity across Britain as a threat, not a source of hope and dynamism. And an economic transition away from Scotland's main industries was, as it was in Sheffield and Sunderland, Nottinghamshire and Neath, chaotic, unstable, brutal. But if you come to places like Nova Innovation here, or the hydrogen and carbon capture cluster in Grangemouth, the marvel of Whiteley Wind Farm outside Glasgow, then you can glimpse a different path. The green shoots of a third Scotland, a new Scotland, a future Scotland, a Scotland that is once again the beating heart of Britain, because Britain is once again built for and by the solidarity of working people. So let me say directly to those people in Scotland nervous about the change this mission requires. I know the ghosts industrial change unearths. As a young lawyer, I worked with the mining communities to challenge the Tories' pit closure programme. But deep down, we all know this has to happen eventually, and that the only question is when. So in all candour, the reality is this. The moment for decisive action is now. If we wait until North Sea oil and gas runs out, the opportunities this change can bring for Scotland and your community will pass us by. And that would be a historic mistake. An error for the future of Scotland as big as the Thatcher government closing down the coal mines while frittering away the opportunity of the North Sea. My offer, the Labour offer, is this. A credible plan to manage the change, to protect good jobs, create good jobs, no cliff edges. But at the same time, to harness the wealth that's in our air, our seas and our skies, and use it to serve the interests of your community. Because what's true in Scotland is true right across the grassroots of Britain. We can use the opportunity of clean energy to create jobs, to deliver security, bring back hope to communities that got ripped apart by the deindustrialisation of the 1980s. This is a future we can win. But I also have to warn you, politicians are saying exactly the same thing to their people in northern France, in eastern Germany, the Rust Belt of America. Now, we have tremendous advantages here. our coast, our shallow waters, our universities, our creativity, the depth of our skills, the graft of our people, the superpower sciences, the technological edge, and yes, if you can believe it, even our weather. Financial strength here in Edinburgh, and yes, in the City of London too, I know, but nonetheless, the world leader for green finance, a massive advantage for all of us. Seriously, there are no grounds for the defeatism which says we can't lead the world on this, that our prospects will always be squeezed out by the US and the EU. That's declinist nonsense. But at the same time, we've got to get moving. And at the moment, we're standing on the sidelines, wringing our hands, falling behind because our government talks about economic stability, yet understands nothing of what this requires in times like ours. When the winds of change are blowing this fiercely, you need a government that gets involved, that intervenes on behalf of working people to secure stability and growth. Drift equals chaos. This is about Tory ideology. Of course it is. Their impulses are totally out of step with the challenges of the modern world. They still cleave to a set of ideas that came out of the 1980s. The dismissal of industrial strategy. The contempt for active government, the complacency that says only the market decides which industries matter for working people and national security. You cannot understate this. Those ideas are finished. They can't cope with a world where other countries simply don't behave in the way market dogma expects. The world now knows that crucial global supply chains can be weaponized by tyrants. That a sticking plaster approach to investment will only cost more in the long run. And that, for working class communities, trickle-down economics means power trickles up and jobs trickle out. As Jake Sullivan, President Biden's National Security Advisor, put it, this is the new consensus. But Rishi Sunak is blind to it. He's standing still, stubbornly clinging on to the ideas of the past as the opportunities of the future slip through our fingers. I won't let that happen. This cannot be a rerun of the 1980s. We've got to seize the new opportunities. This is the race of our lifetime, and the prize is real. We can cut bills, create jobs, and provide energy security for Britain. That's what a Labour government will deliver. That means we need to invest. Of course it does. And look, I know this comes with challenges. Political, yes. The British people always need to know they can trust Labour to spend their money wisely. But also economic, because there are no shortcuts. No easy escape from the damages the Tories have done to our public finances. The wreckage of the past 13 years. We'll need to be ruthless when it comes to our priorities. And we must accept, without complaint, the constraints of fiscal responsibility. It won't be easy. But if you look at the fiscal rules that Rachel set out nearly 2 years ago, they've proved not just resilient to the growing Tory chaos, but also far-sighted. Long before the starting gun was fired, Rachel and Ed anticipated the race we must win, understood also that this is about protecting our interests, that if your energy security relies on a volatile fossil fuel market, that leaves you exposed, and that all this must be built on a rock of economic stability. So I say again, everything in our manifesto will be fully costed. Day-to-day spending will be completely covered by the taxes we collect, and we will get debt as a share of our economy falling by the end of the next Parliament. These are iron rules, and we must accept the consequences. Because if you lose control of the economy, it's working people who pay the price, We cannot let that happen. This is the bread and butter of responsible government. Our rules are essential for the British people and investors in our country. And let me be clear, our plans to borrow for the infrastructure of tomorrow come firmly within these rules. In fact, they will save our public finances money in the long run. If we fail to move quickly on this, we will increase debt as a share of our economy by 23%. The OBR have already said that. The Tories contest it, but look around the country. This is part of the problem. Sticking plasters everywhere. I'll give you an example. Green crap. That's what they said. Cut the green crap. And so they scrapped investment in home insulation, stalled nuclear energy, banned onshore wind. And the result? When the crisis hit last year, when Russia invaded Ukraine, not only did the bills of businesses and working people go through the roof, we had to borrow £40 billion with no new infrastructure to show for it. That's not green crap, that's Tory crap. Seriously, it doesn't fix the leaky roof when the sun is shining. It ignores the roof and hopes it doesn't rain. So don't tell me this is a global crisis hitting every country the same. It isn't. Time and again, we get hit hardest, and sticking plaster politics is why. So yes, we will borrow to invest. We'll invest to save for new jobs, new technologies, new industries in working class communities, for cheaper bills and national security, for a plan that will harness the opportunity of clean energy and make this country work for working people. And this isn't some kind of sackcloth and sandals message anymore. It's not a nice to have. Clean British energy is cheaper than fossil fuels, 3 times cheaper. That's a potential goldmine for our mission on growth. And the benefits flow primarily to working people and working class communities. I went to the steelworks in Scunthorpe 2 weeks ago and spoke to the workforce there. Now, they don't glue themselves to railings. But let me tell you, they're desperate for change. They say, we want clean energy. We've got the customers. We just need the technology and a government that stands alongside us. It's the same story in Clydebridge, same story in Port Talbot. These jobs are on the line. So let's back carbon capture. Let's invest in hydrogen, nuclear, tidal energy, double onshore wind, treble solar power, quadruple offshore wind, insulate 19 million homes. This is the new foundation for British prosperity. £1,400 a year off energy bills for working families. Just imagine the difference that will make in a cost of living crisis. But to truly maximise the economic benefits, we need to go beyond investment. We've got to roll up our sleeves and start building things. Run towards the barriers, the planning system, the skill shortages, the investor confidence, the grid. If the status quo isn't good enough, we must find the reforms that restart our engine. I'm not going to accept a situation where our planning system means it takes 13 years to build an offshore wind farm. I'm not going to let slow connections to the national grid hold back £200 billion worth of projects. And I'm not going to allow other countries to build the British infrastructure of tomorrow when those jobs belong in our country. No, we're going to throw everything at this. Planning reform, procurement, long-term finance, R&D, a strategic plan for skills and supply chains, a new plan for a new settlement, a clear direction across all 4 nations, pulling together for a simple unifying priority: British power for British jobs. Now, people are going to be sceptical about this. I get that. Especially here in Scotland. People say, we've got the wind farms, we've got the hydroelectricity, we've invested in clean energy, that's all good. But the jobs boom we were promised, it never came. There's no denying this, it's a fact. The Tory SNP era has failed miserably. Less than a quarter of the jobs that the SNP promised have materialised. The simple reason for this is they don't have a plan, never had a plan. In the case of the Tories, don't believe in plans. But at a deeper level, because neither of them are truly invested in Scotland's success. For the SNP, any Scottish triumph in Britain is a threat to the ultimate prize. While the Tories welcome such division because they think it works for them politically. Look at them both now. Look hard. The soap opera that continues to demean Britain's reputation. What do they have to say to the investors who tell me this is great political comedy, but we don't see Britain as a stable investment anymore? They aren't serious. To win this race, we need new institutions, new infrastructure, new investors, and above all, a new mindset. A relentless determination to unlock the pride and purpose of the whole country. So today, three new steps, all in the first year of the next Labour government, the building blocks of our plan for a new Britain. One, we will harness the bounty of clean energy and do exactly what the Tories failed to do with North Sea oil and gas, a new national wealth fund. This will crowd in investment for the projects that are critical for growth. The battery gigafactories, the clean steel plants, the ports that can finally handle large offshore wind parks. And crucially, we'll give the British people a stake in the returns and businesses the stability they need. I spoke to people involved in the projects at Grainbath lately. They're ambitious, clear about the benefits of carbon capture, but frustrated about the speed of progress. And they're also clear about the missing ingredient, political clarity of thought from government. This is what the government doesn't get. Public investment crowds in private investment, provides long-term certainty. This partnership, this is the game changer. There are billions upon billions waiting to be unlocked. Opportunities to create jobs right across the country, in manufacturing and in services. But we've got to move fast. So today we go further. The competition for clean energy investment is fierce, and it will only get fiercer. All around the world, our competitors are developing new frameworks to attract it. And you better believe it, they are rewriting the rules of their economies to make sure it delivers good jobs. The American Inflation Reduction Act is setting the pace. In 7 months, they've created more jobs than we have in 7 years. But they're not the only ones. And in truth, we've never been on this pitch. Britain has the second largest offshore wind capacity in the world, a close second only to China. Yet across the North Sea in Denmark, they've got three times as many jobs. How do you explain that? How do you explain Scottish wind turbines built in Spain, in Holland and Indonesia, as the workers in the fabrication yards in Fife, working people who would be proud to build something great for their country, look out of their window and watch others putting them up on the fourth? There is no justification. But mark my words, this ends with a Labour government. We will transform the way we set the price for investors in clean energy. The contracts for different auctions must deliver jobs as well as investment. We will set new rules as a condition of entry on good work, decent pay and union recognition. But we will also create a new incentive, a direct response to the quickening pace the world is setting on the jobs of the future, a British jobs bonus that will attract new investment, new jobs, new supply chains into our deprived industrial heartlands, will reward companies that back working people, unlock the pride of the builders, bring security and hope back to Britain's grassroots. And finally, the centrepiece, the embodiment of our new priorities and values, a new homegrown energy company, a benefit so many of our competitors already enjoy, like Ørsted in Denmark, Vattenfall in Sweden. The argument is simple. If there is money to be made from our resources, it must serve the British people, must invest in our communities, create British jobs. Right now, Malaysia and Munich, the city of Munich, own more of our offshore wind assets than we do. And this makes it so much harder for us to turn clean British power into good British jobs. No more. We will set up a proper national champion, Great British Energy. We will grow the industries of tomorrow here, the clean energy projects in every community, so that we can win the race for the future. And because it's right for jobs, because it's right for investing in our communities, because it's right for national security, yes, GB Energy will be publicly owned. And let me also be clear, GB Energy will be a shared project owned by all four nations on these islands. So we will set up a governance structure that will protect its long-term future. Whoever's in power in Westminster, whoever's in power in Holyrood. This will be the driving force for a new Britain. It's offshore wind in Scotland, yes, but also in Teesside, North Yorkshire, Grimsby, all the way down our east coast. Tidal energy here and in South Wales. Clean hydrogen energy in Yorkshire, Merseyside and Grangemouth. A national institution, a common cause, the benefits of clean energy owned by the British people, shared by the British people. And because the skills are here, because this belongs to all of us, because of Scottish ingenuity, we will base GB Energy right here in Scotland. This is our plan, our national mission, a down payment on a new Scotland, a new Britain, a united Britain. A Britain built once again by the solidarity of working people right across these islands. It won't be easy. There are tough battles ahead on planning, on the grid, on technology. Prioritising the right investment at the right time in the right place, that's easy to say, but hard to do. And the world is dynamic. We will need to run fast to catch up, faster still to get ahead, faster again to stay there. But do not underestimate the power of pride, the purpose people feel when they're building a legacy for their community. Working people in Scotland, working people across Britain are looking at us again. They want to know if we get this. Want to see if the fire of change still burns inside the Labour belly. And this is our chance. The race of our lifetime. For jobs, for growth, for protecting our planet. National security. The aspirations of working people. Getting our future back. And uniting our country again. Some nation is going to lead the world in offshore wind. Why not this one? Some nation will win the race for new hydrogen power. Why not us? Some nation will become a clean energy superpower. Why not Britain? Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We're now going to take questions from the media, and Anas is going to come and join me on stage to take those questions. It's one each, please, and we're going to start with Beth. Beth Rigby, Sky News.
Thank you. Beth Rigby, Sky News. Mr. Starmer, you're making big promises, but you have already U-turned on your £28 billion a year investment into green transition. Your shadow chancellor said it shows you can be trusted with the public finances. But doesn't it also suggest, as with Brexit, tuition fees, nationalisations, you're just like all of those other politicians who can't be trusted to keep your promises? And on a broader political question, if I may, you've chosen to be here in Scotland today rather than SW1. Boris Johnson's out. There could or couldn't be a vote on him later. While in Scotland, it seems that the SNP stranglehold is finally over. Napoleon said that generals need to be lucky, and you're clearly a lucky general. Surely you can't possibly blow it now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. I think for the record that was two questions, but I've expected nothing less. On the £28 billion, we are doubling down. We're not backing off. And it's really important that we say this for two reasons for the policy position we've adopted. The first is a matter of trust, the very thing you touch on, Beth, which is we said that our fiscal rules were in place. Rachel set them out 2 years or more ago. Inflation now is in a completely different place to where it was 2 years ago because the Tories have made such a mess and done such damage to the economy. But at the same time, as we work through our plans and set out what we'll do in years one, two, three, showing just how serious we are, it's clear that we can ramp up to that £28 billion. And what I would say, Beth, is this. When I say to people in the sector that we will partner with, that we want clean power by 2030. They don't say you're somehow backing down or lacking ambition. They say, whoa, that is a real challenge. Centrica say it's doable, but we're really going to have to go for it. So there's nothing here to read into any sense of lacking ambition or backing down. On the second question, Beth, look, there's a reason that the Tories and the SNP are imploding, and it's their failure in government. For a long time, they've been able to avoid any question about their record, and both of them are now getting questions about their record. And you only have to look at the record and ask the question, and it's the same question of the Tories or the SNP, which is, after however many years in power for each of them, do you feel any better off now than you did when they started? And the answer to that question is no. And because it's no, we can see the impact it's having. But what I would say is this. We know that we have to earn every vote. We know that we have to go up again. I've said to my shadow cabinet, we've got to be exceptional as we go forward from here. There is no right to any vote anywhere in the United Kingdom, whether that's, you know, elsewhere or here in Scotland. We have to earn every vote. I find some comfort in the fact that the changes we've made to the Labour Party, both UK-wide and in Scotland, put us in a position where when people look away from the Tories and SNP and to the opposition, they see a changed Labour Party with answers to the challenges of the future. And I'll end with this. Doesn't it speak volumes that the Labour Party is today launching a plan for the next generation of jobs whilst the Tories are squabbling back in Westminster, and the SNP are preaching about promises that they have broken? Thank you very much, Beth. We'll go to James, please. James Cook, BBC.
Yes, thanks very much, Sir Keir. James Cook, BBC News. On the facts, first of all, can you confirm that a Labour government would no longer issue exploration licences for the North Sea, but would allow drilling licences to continue to be issued in existing fields? And on the reaction to that, oil industry bosses and trade unions appear to be united in opposition to your plans, warning that they would chill investment and cost jobs. Doesn't that worry you?
Look, James, firstly, thank you for that question. Our policy is directed at exploration licences, as you rightly say, the very early stage licences, and we're very clear about that. That equally means that oil and gas will be part of the mix for decades to come under existing licences,
well into the 2050s. But, and I was trying to get at this in my speech, we've got to face the reality that this is dwindling. We've got to be absolutely clear that the transition is on. All around the world, the discussion in other countries about the power of the future is about renewables. And they're racing ahead. The US is racing ahead. They're like a magnet for jobs and investment. The EU is responding, and we need to respond. So this is a massive opportunity to deliver lower bills, not just sticking plaster, where it's just for this year or next year with a windfall tax that can't be sustained, but lower bills because renewables are cheaper. Energy security, because Putin is trying to put his boot on our throat. And oil and gas is sold onto the international market, so that doesn't help reduce bills. And the next generation of jobs. And, you know, when I look back at what happened with the coal mining communities, with the coal fields, and look at the mistakes that were made then, not planning for the future, not having the courage to see the change that was necessary, not leading your nation through that change, I am resolved that we will never repeat that under a Labour government. We will plan for that change and will ensure that good quality jobs are available here, 50,000 in Scotland, all across the UK. And in generations to come, others will look back and say that was a reforming Labour government that seized the moment and secured our energy supply for the future. Anas, can I bring you in on
just
this one, please?
Three really brief points, James. First one is I can completely understand the concern from industry and trade unions because they have been promised for the last decade and government hasn't backed up that promise either with investment, partnership or forward thinking. And we're going to change that. You heard that from Keir's speech today. The second point I'd make is we're really clear there is no cliff edge. There is no turning off of the taps, and oil and gas will play a significant role for decades to come. And the third point is partnership. Partnership is crucial to this. We cannot do this alone. We can have mission-driven government from the Prime Minister, from the Treasury, but unless we get that genuine partnership with industry to loop in that strategic investment, that scale of investment, we're not going to deliver on this ambition, and we're going to be true to that partnership.
Great. Peter from ITV Border. Peter.
So, Keir, this document today says you're committed not to hand out new licences to oil and gas. You also said in your speech that this is a moment for decisive action. So if you were Prime Minister today, would you give the go-ahead to the Rosebank field? The logic of this document surely is that you wouldn't. So why not say that now and be, as you said in your speech, decisive, and say, if I become Prime Minister, I will not give the go-ahead, I'll rescind those licences. Because your document also says you want to demonstrate climate leadership to protect our planet for future generations. A 3 million barrel oil field doesn't do that, does it?
Peter, the position we've taken consistently on this is no to new exploration licences, but whether existing licences, and that includes any that are granted between now and the next election, we're not going to interfere with them. We know the impact that would have on investors, and we're not going to interfere with them. Rosebank is probably up for decision very soon now, and if it's granted, then that falls into the category of existing licences. But this is about the opportunity that renewables gives us, the opportunity for the next generation of jobs, and lower bills and energy security. And if we had taken just some of the steps that we've set out today in the last 10 to 15 years... What Ed said in his introduction, we wouldn't be where we are now. We're in the middle of a cost of living crisis, which is bearing down on working families across Scotland, working families across the whole of the United Kingdom, because of the failure to take the difficult decisions. And we're not going to fail to take those difficult decisions. This is about the opportunities of the future. Thank you, Peter. I've got Fiona from The Guardian. Do we have a...
Thanks.
Fiona.
Mr. Starmer, the chair of the Climate Change Committee called the Tories hypocrites because they're handing out new licences while telling other countries not to. But you're talking about continuing to produce oil and gas here for decades. Now, if all countries did that and exploited their reserves like that, we'd go well beyond 1.5 degrees. So by saying that, you're going to be asking other countries to not exploit their reserves while we will exploit ours. Doesn't that make you a hypocrite?
No, it's a very clear approach we've taken, which is whether existing licences, obviously we'll work with the sector under those licences. There'll be a mix of oil and gas, but there's got to be a transition, not least because oil and gas is running out. Almost 90% of the gas in the North Sea is already accounted for. It's either out or it's already under licence. And therefore, this is a diminishing return, and we have to be ready for that transition. And that's why I said in my speech, we have to seize this moment. And the ambition we've set out for clean power, clean electricity by 2030 is a really massive ambition. We'll change the nature of power generation in this country, and we will not fall behind other countries on our obligations. We'll get ahead of them, but in doing so, we'll have, you know, lower bills, energy security, and the jobs of the future. Thank you, Fiona, and I'll go to Gina of LBC.
Thanks, Sir Keir. Can I ask, you talked a lot about an age of insecurity and stability. There will be people listening to this today in the oil and gas industry now worried about their jobs. There are people worried about their homes. What is your message of reassurance to people, you know, who are looking at their rents rising, their mortgages rising, their energy bills rising? And can I ask, this need for investment from industry, does that mean no more windfall taxes on energy companies by a Labour government?
Anas, can I come to you?
The first thing to do is, people can see the record profits being made by the oil and gas giants. And this is unexpected profits because of what's happened between Russia and Ukraine. And I think it's perfectly reasonable for us to say, in the face of a cost of living crisis where bills are skyrocketing and companies are making those excess profits, that we do have that short-term windfall tax on those excess profits so we can put that money back into families' pockets. And can I also give a reassurance on the first point? We cannot be any clearer. We are not going to make the same mistakes as Thatcher did with the mining industry. We are not going to decimate communities. We are not taking away people's jobs. Those jobs will stay. Those jobs will support and will work with the industry to do that meaningful transition. What we're talking about here is a declining asset and what comes in the face of that declining asset. Now, we can choose to let the asset deplete and then choose to make the investments when it's too late in order to get that transition of jobs, or we can work in partnership to make those strategic investments so people can see with their eyes what that transition looks like, not have a blind promise.
Great, thank you. And I've got Rachel Watson from The Sun.
Thanks. Just on Rosebank again, if you don't decide to rescind that licence, are you just in effect letting the Tories do your dirty work if they do give it the go-ahead? And also, as has been said, unions and industry are against your plans on the North Sea oil licence ban. Are there any circumstances that you would grant new licences in the national interest?
Well, look, I think I've been pretty clear three or four times now in relation to this, in relation to existing licences. And we're obviously talking to and working with the unions, talking to and working with the sector. I had a round of discussions with the sector last week. And I would say this about both the unions and the sector. They really want to work with us on the plan we're setting out today. They want to roll up their sleeves and work with us on the renewables because they know the future's in renewables. Talk to any of the players in the sector and they're already putting more in the renewables basket than they are in oil and gas. So they're already on this transition. I think this depiction of them sort of over here only concerned with oil and gas and renewables of no interest is wrong. Actually, they're running towards it. And what they want is a government that works with them and recognises that as we go forward. And that's what we offer them, and we're looking forward to working with them on. It's got to be fair. It's got to ensure that the jobs of the future are in the places. And that's why the British jobs bonus is so important, because that is intended to ensure that the jobs in the sector, the supply chain jobs in the sector, are here in the UK. And in Scotland, this is felt very, very strongly, which is, yes, we've got the offshore wind, but we didn't get the jobs with it. The supply chains are elsewhere. I went to Whiteleys, to that turbine, the biggest turbine factory, wind farm in Scotland, actually in the UK. And every single one of the 350 turbines was built elsewhere. Not a single one was built in the United Kingdom. And that's why our British jobs bonus is so important. That is to ensure that those jobs are here in the UK and in particular targeted at the places that most need that, those industrial heartlands. It is the complete opposite of what the Tories failed to do with coal mining, where they let something die, they had no plan for the future, and frankly we're still feeling that, you know, decades later. Thank you very much. Right.
Can I just repeat the four principles of energy policy which we've all set out today? And we can't be clearer about this. More jobs, not fewer jobs. Lower bills, not higher bills. Greater energy security, not greater energy insecurity. And climate leadership. That are the four principles that guide all of our energy policy.
Thank you. And Rachel from The Scotsman.
Hi there. I know you said there's not going to be a cliff edge end to oil and gas, but how long can somebody who's working in that industry expect to keep their jobs? And if there's somebody who is considering a career in that industry just now, would you discourage them from pursuing that career?
Well, look, absolutely not. And those people are going to keep their jobs. I think it's really important to stress that. Oil and gas is going to play a significant role for decades to come. Many of those roles are already starting to be transitioned in terms of people moving from oil and gas. We met many of those workers, for example, in Wick that previously worked in the oil and gas sector but now work in our offshore wind capacity. So those jobs will be protected. What we want to do is work with industry to make sure there is that pathway from those oil and gas jobs longer term into those green revolution jobs.
Great. Kieran from The Times.
Thanks very much. This morning, journalists were promised a hydrogen bus to bring them down here today. And in fact, what was waiting for them was a diesel vehicle with a driver who didn't know where they were going. Given that Labour appears to have spent the last few weeks squabbling over the details of this after what Anas called an unhelpful briefing to the Sunday Times a few weeks ago, why should anyone trust Labour to be across the details to make these ambitious plans work?
Can I just first of all say there's a hydrogen bus company here, so I'm sure we'll talk to them and make sure we're recruiting more hydrogen buses across our public transport infrastructure for every part. But I don't know if Keir wants to come back on the wider point.
On the wider point, look, you've got the team working on this mission right here in this room, all speaking this morning, all speaking with one voice. And this is an ambitious plan which is set out in detail, not only in the various words that we've all said this morning, all complimenting words, by the way, but also in the document that underpins it, that sets out the nuts and bolts. And, you know, this is an exciting plan for the future. It shows an opposition ready for government, already planning for government, and talking to the sector about how we implement these plans, because what we don't want to do is to get to the next election, and if we're privileged enough to win it, and it will be a privilege to serve, to then start our discussion. So it's the complete opposite, Kieran, of the picture you paint. This is a strong plan, it's an agreed plan, and we are already talking to the sector about how we implement it. And across the sector, they want to hear that argument. We went to Scunthorpe Steelworks, Ed and I, last week. I'll give you just an example of why this is so important. Their customers want decarbonised steel, and they can't produce decustomised steel. And the workforce want to change because they want their jobs. They want their factory, their steelworks to survive. And it will only survive if they go through this change. So they're not saying to us, please save the jobs we've got. They're saying, please help us have the jobs now and for the future. And that's the level of engagement that we're involved in the delivery of this plan. So I'm very confident in this plan. It's a very united team as we go forward. And I think, Kieran, as you go through the document, which you probably haven't had the chance to get, the background document, you'll see it's a huge amount of detail there about how we're going to implement it. David from the Mirror.
Yeah, hi, thank you very much. Panel base at the weekend predicted that Labour would now win 26 seats in Scotland. Is this realistic, do you think? How important is Scotland in your plans to try and in the path to Downing Street? Very quickly, if I may, given the events in Westminster at the moment, how do you think history is going to judge Boris Johnson, and what impact is he, in coming elections, is he likely to have in terms of trusting politicians? How much of a challenge is it going to be to win that back?
Yeah, just, David, on the question of Scotland, I'll leave the polls to Anas, because I'm very, very conscious of the fact that, for me, there are two things that matter, because it matters to me, it matters to Labour. Scotland is central to our planning as we go forward for two reasons. Of course, there's the fact that we need seats in Scotland to win a general election. But there's a secondary and really important factor for me, and that is if we are privileged to serve, I want to be the Prime Minister not just of the UK, but for the UK. And therefore, I want that representation here in Scotland to bind together everything that we do as an incoming Labour government for the whole of the United Kingdom. And one of the features of the last 10 to 15 years has been divide, 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 find points of difference. I want to be the Prime Minister leading a Labour government that legitimately says we have representation across the whole of the United Kingdom and we will pull people together on the important things that matter. This mission is not going to be achieved if we don't pull together as all four nations. And so, yes, it's a question of the number of seats, but it's not a mathematical calculation alone. It's something deep about what I want to achieve if we are privileged enough to serve as the next Labour government, and I'm Prime Minister for the UK, not just of the UK. Anas, you've been
Can I say directly on the polls that we are not complacent for a second, and our feet are firmly on the ground. Of course, we recognise it's significant progress, but we've still got a hell of a lot of work to do. And the hard work we've got to do, and we've had to do this, Keir's had to do this in the last 3 years across the UK, I've had to do it across Scotland for the last 2 years, is first of all demonstrate the Labour Party is changing and is focused on the future, not the past. Second, rebuild our campaigning infrastructure so we're actually reaching out and listening to people and expressing their concerns. Third, being that credible opposition, and I think we have built that both across the UK and here in Scotland, where people can now see how these two governments are failing us. But the fourth and the most important part, and today is a huge part of this, is setting out not just why our opponents deserve to lose, but actually why Labour needs to and deserves to win. And why Labour needs to and deserves to win, you can hear in terms of taking action on the cost of living crisis, delivering that revolution in the green technologies in Scotland and across the UK for every part of our country so we can have that energy security and investment and strong economy going forward. And a third crucial part is around the NHS. Today, the First Minister of Scotland is setting out a charter of rights for an independent country. One of those rights is access to healthcare. This is a First Minister who was Health Secretary and who now as First Minister presides over 750,000 Scots waiting on an NHS waiting list. It's not acceptable, it's not right. So, of course, we welcome the poll, but we've got a hell of a lot of work to do and we're not complacent about that for a second.
Great, thank you, Alice. And then, finally, Andy from Press and Journal. Andy.
Hi, to you, Keir, please. The energy industry workers and businesses in the northeast of Scotland in particular are looking for a statement of intent. Several companies tell us that they're worried about jobs having to be cut because of policies such as windfall taxes. We're in Leith today instead of somewhere like Aberdeen, where we keep being drawn back to oil and gas and transition. So why and what can you say to them and the offshore workers there who are worried about their future and perhaps the GB Energy HQ can be located there?
I'll get Keir to come in a second. We've not decided the location yet, but I promise that is work that we will be doing. But I think it's important, I think you're right to make the point about Aberdeen, and I'll address Aberdeen in a second. But I think it's also important to stress that the oil and gas sector is not just important to Aberdeen. If you look at the supply chains, they go right across the whole of the UK and jobs rely on that in every part of the UK. Where we are right now is a perfect example of that. And the promise I want to make to colleagues in Aberdeen and to people that work in our oil and gas sector and renewable sector in Aberdeen is this is a plan that is for you and will work with you to deliver for you. This is not a plan that's bad for Aberdeen. I am confident that it's good for Aberdeen, it's good news for the North East, it's good news for Scotland, and it's good news for every part of the UK. And the promise we make is we're not going to just talk from two parliaments, one either in Westminster or one from Holyrood, about what happens in individual communities. We promise we will be out there having those conversations and working in partnership with those industries to deliver. And you'll be seeing ourselves in Aberdeen, I'm sure, in not the not too distant future.
Thank you all very much for coming this morning. Thank you very much. I think we're...